Your dog looks like Snuffleupagus without a snout. Like you.
Thanks.
Oh my god, I'll send you a picture.
She was being great, and then all of a sudden when I started talking about Maker's Mark, she started losing her mind.
Hi, I'm Kieran Shetry.
And I'm Jeremy Goldman, and this is Future Proof. So a lot of what we're talking about, and we actually got some really good responses when we had a Future of Work episode featuring David Singer of Grind, which was a pioneer in the co-working space. We had a lot of good feedback on that, and people were asking us to talk more about what the future of work and virtual work, what all of that looks like for our society. And I was like, I know somebody who's really awesome to come on the show.
And then when that person couldn't show up, he called, I'm teasing. We are happy to welcome Jess Ostroff. She is director of Calm at Don't Panic Management, which we're going to find out more about. But I first want to congratulate you because you just had a book drop today too, right?
Yes, thank you so much. It's a little bit surreal right now. I got the book's physical copies in the mail as well, so that makes it feel a little bit more real, but it's strange that it's actually come to fruition because it's been such a crazy process. The book is called Panic Proof, and it's about how the right virtual assistant can save your sanity and grow your business. And those are two things that I'm really passionate about. I think that you should never have to go it alone when you're building a business, and I also think that you shouldn't have to lose your mind. There should be an easier way. So the book is about virtual assistants, but also about how you can get deeper into your own needs and unique values and figure out what you are best at so that you can relegate, automate, or delegate the rest of those things and live a life that you love.
Let's go back a second. I mean, tell us a little bit about your work.
Thank you. Yeah. So my name is Jess. My title is the director of Calm at Don't Panic Management, which is my virtual assistant agency that I started in 2011. And I've come a long way since then, as has the work that I have been doing. But one thing I've noticed has remained the same. And that is that no matter what you do, no matter what industry you're in, you can't do things alone. And everybody needs help. The way in which we go about getting help, of course, does change and has changed over time. And what I focus on is how people can use virtual support to help them get their work done. And really, ultimately, my mission is to help people live a life that they love, not just a life that they dread. You know, I don't want people going to work every day and hating everything that they do. I want them to be happy. I want them to be doing the things that they are uniquely qualified to do. And I want them to relegate, automate, or delegate the rest.
I wanted to actually ask you, we have a few lightning round questions, get to know everybody who's coming on, so that's cool.
This is supposed to be fun, so you don't have to overthink it.
Yeah.
I always have fun, so don't worry about that.
You got to be within, which is true. You got to be within like one sentence for each one. Okay.
Yeah, so, but I love this one that you wrote.
Which one?
Well, it's basically you're asking her because she's the one that made up this virtual assistant company. If you could have one celebrity that is Jess's virtual assistant for the day, who would you pick?
Oh my God. That is such a good question. Oh, one celebrity. I mean, I have been watching a lot of James Bond movies lately, and I'm in the old ones right now. And I just, man, it's hard to say. I mean, some of
she's going on hunk, not necessarily in those.
No, they might be very, very competent. Who knows?
but I want a Moneypenny. Like, I want one of the Moneypennies to be my, and maybe that's not a good answer because it's not like one, it's not always the same girl. It's not always the same, but like, she's amazing. And I want my little, I want the guy that gives you the gadgets, you know, like the suitcase and this button does this and that. And that would be awesome.
I want Judi Dench, actually. I think she'd be pretty
great.
Oh,
there you go. Good M.
All right. Bye. That I'm a total dork here because I want The Rock.
Oh, that's a good one. I love
that. Yeah, that's pretty good.
You know what? If I got in any trouble, I feel like he could take care of it, you know, really quickly.
Or just like move my furniture also. That would be helpful.
Yeah.
For sure. Oh, okay. So that was a long version of a lightning round question.
Sorry about
but
that.
Yeah, you're a bad person. Last book that you've read.
I am reading Me Before You. So I guess that's a currently reading. The last book I read before that was Panic Proof because I was editing it. So.
Oh, wait. So speaking of lighter, okay, good question. If you had to punch someone, anyone, famous or not, who would it be?
Oh, right this minute? Myself?
I would yourself? Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you mine because it's not hard. I would punch Jeremy.
I was going to say.
I can punch him and he would go down.
I would probably punch her right back, but I think that she is probably stronger and she's definitely more fit than me. It's actually, you should.
I'm just angrier. That's the difference.
That should okay. be a video podcast of you guys punching each other.
Oh, I love that. Okay. That's our next project.
Right. So mine is the one I'm living right now, but for you, what is the worst job you've ever had?
Oh man, I've had a lot of bad jobs. The worst job I ever had, and I write about this a little bit in the book, was right after I graduated, I did an AmeriCorps program, which was very difficult, but not the worst job I ever had. And after that, I started getting into the social media space and worked as a social media coordinator for a nonprofit. And my boss didn't know what social media was. I found out after I was hired, and that was the worst job ever because I basically had to prove to everyone that I was working and that I was doing things that were important all the time. And it was just right. like an uphill battle that I could not fight.
Tell us what your favorite brands are and especially as it relates to how they're marketed, in this day and age, who would you pick?
I will say Maker's Mark is one of the ones that I follow. And back in the day, I became an ambassador for them because I liked their content so much.
And that, Maker's Mark? Are you kidding?
Yeah.
How did you get that job?
Yeah, well, it's you can apply. You can apply. It's not paid or anything, but it's one of those sort of, they were an early adopter to influencer marketing programs. And I have a barrel at the Maker's Mark distillery with my name on it. And I will, once it matures, I'll be able to get some of it in a bottle in a few years. So they're one of my favorites.
I love that you were ahead of the curve in a lot of ways with respect to virtual assistants and the future of virtual work. So, I mean, can you tell us a little bit about what inspired you to write Panic Proof and how to actually, how people can embrace what the future of work looks like?
Absolutely. There are very few things today, I think, that hold an entrepreneur back from trying and being successful. I would say the biggest barrier is yourself. the second biggest is probably, you know, having a good idea or not. But the traditional barriers that people used to have, which were location, geography, cost of production for goods and services, now don't exist as much. I mean, you can make a living online just having your voice and having your knowledge and selling content related to those things. And that's amazing. And I think that that is going to continue to be important for our future economic state. But the other thing is what I said in the beginning, that I don't think anybody can do this alone and be completely successful or be completely happy. And that's another thing that's great about virtual work is that even if you choose to live your life in an igloo in Alaska and, you know, you have Wi-Fi or whatever, you can hire somebody. Right. Not sure if that would actually work, but
I would love to live in an igloo. I always run warm. Sorry, I'm getting us off topic.
Oh, really? That's a fun fact.
I'm a walking hot flash.
Whatever. Our office is so hot. I swear to God, it's like he's a wrestler or something.
I don't control the temperature. Okay.
One of the things I wanted to ask you from a perspective of a woman and somebody who is, you know, I've had a career in television journalism. I love the idea of entrepreneurial, you know, endeavors. How do you create a business model and go about launching something like this? I mean, because that's a pretty heavy task, you know, it's not, and you're writing a book. So you must have a lot of not task rabbits. You must have a lot of your dope. but that's a lot to do. And so for women out there who are looking to possibly reinvent themselves or maybe get back onto the, you know, the off the mommy track and back onto the career track, Mm-hmm. Entrepreneurial endeavors are pretty, I think, something that is very aspirational. How did you come up with it? And is it something for everybody, or is it a certain skill set you have to have?
For me, you know, this wasn't like one day I woke up and I was like, I want to start a virtual assistant agency. You know, that didn't happen. I knew that I was unhappy. I think a lot of entrepreneurial type people come out of a place of sadness or despair or, you know, something going wrong in their lives. And that is what happened to me. You know, that job I was telling you about where I was a social media manager and my life was terrible, you know, for me, at least as a 22-year-old, it wasn't that terrible, but, I knew I wanted to do something different, and I knew that helping people was important to me. And so that's what I decided to look into, was how can I use the skills and knowledge that I have from my job experience and my college experience and put it to good use. And so, it was sort of by chance that I had joined Twitter, and I tell this story in the book too. And one of my former internship bosses tweeted, "Hey, I need a virtual assistant. Does anybody know anyone?" Which was funny because I didn't know what a virtual assistant was, but I figured, you know, I've worked with this guy before. I know him. I like him. I can do this. I can do anything that an administrative assistant can do. I can do. And so I applied to that and got that, and really just, I didn't quit my job though. You know, I knew that I wasn't ready to take the plunge until I had enough client work and I had enough money to pay my bills. And that would be my advice, especially for people who are trying to transition out of a career and into something new. Like, you don't have to go all in immediately. You can start doing a side hustle. You know, there's a reason why the side hustle term even exists. It's a great idea. And that way, you know, especially if you're a mom.
This is our side hustle.
This is our side hustle, lady.
Young people, for some God, who knows why, reason, ask me for advice career-wise.
Young people these days.
I mean, I think part of it was my second book was part about personal branding. So then everybody, you know, naturally thinks you know more about it. But I think that there's almost no excuse now where what I say is, like, when people are laid off in between roles, sometimes you have the ability to create something for yourself. The flexibility in our society is kind of both a blessing and a curse. And I mean, I'm wondering what you think about that. Do you think that this almost decentralized work, this Upwork like economy or gig economy that we're dealing with now, is it more good than bad, or does that even matter? Should we just accept it, you know, rather than fighting it?
Mm-hmm. I think it's a great question. For me, I think there is more good than bad, but I also think that it's not for everybody. And I don't think that you should try and force yourself into a virtual job or a new industry or a new type of work if it's not for you. That being said, you know, you're not going to know if it's not for you unless you try it. So I think if you have the time, the patience, the hard work, the motivation to try things, you should. And as low risk as you can make it as possible, at least at first, is great. You know, if you're a banker and you're really interested in, I don't know, artisanal chocolates, and you want to learn more about it, start an artisanal chocolate podcast and interview chocolate makers, and do that whenever you can. You know, do it at nights, do it early in the morning. Start seeing if there is a way for you to explore this passion of yours without, you know, cutting off your whole salary. And the great thing about podcasts, and it's great that you guys are doing this, is that you get connected to other people who are interested in the same things that you are, and it allows you to start growing your network and making those connections. And I think that's a great way to start building your own personal brand as well, and start doing something different if you want to make a change. And again, it's low risk. It doesn't have to, you can produce a podcast yourself, in which case it wouldn't cost anything, or you could hire Don't Panic Management to produce your podcast for you. Little plug
perfect
there.
Tie-in. Yeah. when relevant, you
all
know?
It does is cost us our sanity. Other than that, nothing much.
I think that the future, because obviously you talked about it on a human level, which is great, but then there are all these companies that are, I think, looking at, on one hand, they can hire, you know, consultants rather than full-time employees, which is great, but also they can have their full-time employees sometimes be virtual and be remote. And I mean, what are some of the advantages to employers to offer that type of virtual work and to work with people who aren't necessarily in front of them, you know, 9 to 5 or 9 to 6.
Right. I think the most obvious one and the reason why a lot of people do it is because they are in a place perhaps where they can't find the best qualified candidate. And so they have to expand their hiring pool. And by expanding their hiring pool, they are, you know, looking at other geographical regions. So that's the most obvious benefit, is that you're not tied to wherever your office is or wherever your house is if you work from home.
When I first heard that you were working on that, it made me really think about Getting to Like, the one that I co-authored a year and a half ago now. I think, geez, time flies. But I think that this is one of those things where there are a lot of people who, when they were growing up, you're right, like just like you said, didn't necessarily even think about it, didn't even think that this was a potential way for them to go from a career perspective. And now it just seems that more and more people are realizing, well, it's not a perfect way to go. It's an option. And it just seems like people like you and I, we had to almost, you know, accidentally discover that the future of work could look a little bit different than, you know, it's not like necessarily Don Draper going into like a beautiful office every day with your name on it. It's sometimes a little different.
Right. And I think it's easier for younger people to imagine that. But I know that, you know, even one of my clients, actually, I learned recently that I was the first experience that he had had working virtually with anyone. And I wouldn't have known it because he did such a great job working with me. But he had been running an agency and he had had, you know, 20 to 50 full-time employees at any given time. And they were all in the office. They were all clocking in and clocking out. And he couldn't imagine that having people working for him virtually would be successful. And I get that. I mean, it's hard to, especially if you've been doing something the same way for however many years or decades, it's hard to think that some other way is possible. But, you know, I mean, it's just like anything else, as we've seen with technology and we've seen with the changes in our economy, anything is possible. And it's just more about finding the right person and more about instilling your values in them and making sure that you're an equal part of the relationship. I think one of the biggest issues that I see is someone who hires a virtual assistant and thinks that it's magic. And while I would love to say that it is magic and it can be magical, that's not how it works. You know, you get out what you put in, and you need to be committed to training your virtual assistant. You need to be committed to giving feedback, and you need to be committed to the growth of the relationship over time, because in the best relationships, this person becomes your right hand and this person is just as invested in your business as you are. And that's really, really valuable. And that's much more valuable than, you know, whatever dollars per hour that you're paying them. It's a person that you can trust, that you can call right on, and who will be reliable.
For the person doing it, how is it cheaper or, you know, more cost effective? B, meaning the company hiring the person that they need. B, how is it better to be, you know, one of the people in this virtual assistant world as opposed to just having a job where you work at, you know, the same company every day? And then C, for you, how is this monetized?
Usually the reason why people go for a virtual person as opposed to an in-house full-time employee is because the job isn't a full-time job. It's like maybe 10 hours a week or 20 hours a week. And so the cost to hire a part-time employee with benefits, with healthcare, you know, all of those things, and not to mention the equipment, you know, computers, more desk space, whatever it is, that starts to really add up quickly. Jeremy, from what I know about you, you're such a social butterfly. I mean, you need to be around people. You thrive on conversations and being with people, whereas I'm like, I want to be by myself. So I like talking to people. I have video calls. You know, I was on calls all day. It's not that I'm not talking with people. It's not that I'm not engaging with people, but I'm at home doing it on my own time. I have my dog here.
Your dog looks like Snuffleupagus without a smile. Like you.
Thanks.
Oh my God, I'll send you a picture.
She was being great. And then all of a sudden, when I started talking about Maker's Mark, she started losing her mind.
Yeah, because she wants
You know, we have a lot of assistants on my team who have children, and maybe they need to go drop off their kids in the morning, and then they want to go to the gym, or they want to do whatever they do in their life, and they don't want to be tied to trying to get to an office by 9 a.m. You can get your work done whenever, wherever, as long as you meet the deadline. And a lot of people are very deadline motivated as opposed to, you know, environmental or hours motivated. And I think those are the people that really thrive in more of an hours-based and virtual type work environment. So again, it just kind of depends on your values as an employer and your budget, of course. And then from the contractor or assistant perspective, it depends on how you do your best work. And I don't think there's anything wrong with offices. I don't think offices are going away, because I don't think that every single person can thrive in a virtual environment.
I'm glad that you mentioned that, because just the whole entire idea of people work differently. Because I think the one mm-hmm. thing that people are kind of forgetting about, everybody likes to talk about the Slackification of our society and how great it is that we can work remotely because of Dropbox and Box and anywhere else where people can share files. And people kind of forget about the fact that at the end of the day, we are social creatures, and you know, technology can at the very least go so far to address that or mitigate certain things. But certain people want to be behind the scenes. Certain people need to be very collaborative. Certain people need like an hour or two of meetings, and then like they afterwards cannot talk to a human being. So there are all these different ways of working, and technology, I think, can be an enabler, but it's not the thing that is automatically going to stop human beings from congregating next to one another. So I think you're right about that.
Yeah. And I think that it's a cop out, you know, when some people are like, oh, millennials like can only work from home and like, or they all use all this technology. Like, no, it's not about millennials. It's not about Gen X. It's not about boomers. It's not, it's about individuals. And it's more about understanding what each individual needs. And I don't think that's just the job of the employer. It's also the job of the employee and the individual to understand what their own needs are so that they can communicate that to the person that they're trying to get a job from. And that's what I think is so exciting about virtual work and the future of work, is that there are more options than ever for people to actually find the right fit for them. And that might mean, you know, kissing a few frogs, whatever, you know, working in the chicken factory. But hopefully, because there are so many options and there's so many resources for people to understand what the best option is for them, that one day everyone will be in a role that really fits them.
I want to ask you, how do people actually figure out if having a virtual work life is right for them? And then B, if you're somebody who kind of like on the managerial side should even be trying to work with more virtual workers, if that's going to work for you.
How do you know if you're ready? Or how do you know if you could manage virtual people? I spend a lot of time talking to people about that and trying to get into their brain and understanding whether they have the time and the patience to work with someone virtually, because it's not the same as like walking over to my desk and saying, you know, tapping me on the shoulder and saying, hey, Jess, I need this right now. Do you think you can get to it? You know, there's just a lot more attention that has to go into making sure that you're prepared with assignments to give to your virtual person, that you are clear with instructions for your virtual person, and that you're reasonable with deadlines. And not everybody has that. You know, there are a lot of people that we've worked with who are used to working in these really fast-paced environments. They're used to everything being on fire all the time. And that doesn't work as well with virtual support, because, you know, unless you're like constantly on a Slack channel or constantly on a text message thread or something like that, it's just hard to get that kind of immediate emergency response when you're not in the same room.
I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask you anyway, just because I know we got to let you go. If people want to find out more about your work, what should they do?
They can go to my new website, jessostroff.com. They can also order the book or go straight to the book page on the site at panicproofbook.com. And then I'm on social media. Instagram is probably my favorite place, at Jess Ostroff. That's my handle pretty much anywhere.
Jess, thank you so much. This is really great. And I think really informative, a great conversation.
Thank you, Jeremy and Kieran. It was so fun chatting with you, and I will see you soon.
Let us know, by all means, what you thought of this episode, and if people are interested in subscribing, if you're not yet a subscriber, Stitcher and Apple Podcasts are the best places to do that. You can also rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, so thank you for all of the feedback. We're so happy to be seeing that so many of you are enjoying listening to this stuff. So once again, signing off, I'm Jeremy Goldman.
And I'm Kieran Chetri, and you've been listening to Future Proof.